Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
How far would you go to ease your loved one's pain? How far, really, if your loved one had cancer? Would you try Eastern medicines and non-traditional therapies?
I'm used to not being traditional, but breaking the law is a little bit different.
But that is exactly what Marilyn Howell did. For all intents and purposes, the former Brookline school teacher committed a crime to help ease the final 2 weeks of her daughter's life. Her daughter Mara was just 32 when she was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Mara died 14 months later after what Howell calls an excruciating odyssey of treatments. It began with many rounds of chemotherapy, all of which failed.
She also did Tibetan herbs with Dr. Donden, who used to be the Dalai Lama's private physician. In Brazil, she went to John of God, probably the most famous healer in the world. And while it didn't stop her cancer, it was an incredible experience.
Mara, however, was in pain, a lot of pain. Howell writes about the lengths she went to ebb away that pain in her new book, Honor Thy Daughter.
She had not only every pill and injection you could imagine for pain control, she also had alcohol injected into a spinal nerve, trying to kill the nerve to that transfer the pain. That didn't work. They tried an intrathecal trial, which is where there's medications pumped into the cerebral spinal fluid. That didn't work. So when that tube was removed from her spine, that was an opportunity to shoot her up with as much drugs as possible and bring her home. But even then, she said, I'm not coming home to die. I'm coming home and I'll find some new treatments. And she was not going to be defeated, but she was in pain.
I can't imagine what it was like for you as a mother to have your daughter come home and to witness her 24 hours a day being in such pain.
I didn't know how I would get through it myself. And, of course, I would do anything to make it better. Anything. And that included eventually going outside the law.
How did you make that decision?
I had heard about a study at McLean Hospital using MDMA with end-stage cancer patients.
And that's ecstasy, right?
That's ecstasy. Okay. For anxiety and depression. And I knew at that point in time when I first got the message that I couldn't talk to Mara about it because it was end stage and she wasn't admitting she was end stage. But a couple of months later, when no pain medications were working, I suggested it in a different framework, saying that, perhaps this could help her with pain, but she knew that psychedelics sometimes evoked mystical experiences or potentially a transformative healing. So it was really two motivations were going on. I wanted her to be out of pain. I wanted her to have some kind of acceptance because she was suffering so badly. And for her, it was one last shot at a miracle.
This might sound kind of just naive, but how did you go about getting the ecstasy? And did you give it to your daughter at home?
It was at home, but I wanted a therapist who knew what to do. I had no experience with ecstasy whatsoever. I emailed everyone that I knew to find out if there was someone out there. We knew, or at least I knew from some of the research that I had done, that there were still many, many therapists who had used MDMA when it was legal back in the 70s and 80s, and that many of them were doing it underground. And I thought perhaps if I put the word out to two generations of people that we might come up with a therapist. And indeed, it took about a week, and we found someone who was willing to come and be a co-therapist with me and provide the MDMA.
So after the first treatment, then, of ecstasy, how did Mara react to it? What happened?
The best thing about it was that it stopped her pain.
Immediately?
No, it takes an hour or two for the drug to take effect. And she was, at that point, unable to get up from her bed for more than a few minutes because the pain would spike. she was able to walk across the street with a friend who was visiting from California and have a conversation, be like her old self, a real person, hearing somebody else's problems. She was able to eat. Her appetite came back. So it was like a respite. It was like all of a sudden she was back to herself again and out of pain.
Well, Marilyn, if you just hang on for just one second, I want to introduce into the conversation Carrie Goldberg. She is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, and it's actually Carrie's reporting on the story that brings you to us here today at Radio Boston. So, Carrie, welcome back.
Thank you, Meghna.
You have actually read Marilyn Howell's book, Honor Thy Daughter. Mm-hmm. And can I just first ask you how you responded to what she's written?
Well, my copy of her book got very waterlogged. I found it just such a painful, sad story, and also so touching because it struck me as an example of how a mother's love goes above and beyond anything that you can imagine.
Carrie, you know, Marilyn describes this process of having to sort of go underground to look for someone, a therapist, to help administer the MDMA, the ecstasy. Is it because it's still not very widely accepted amongst doctors that this is a potential form of therapy for folks who are experiencing that much pain at the end of life?
Right. I mean, that's putting it lightly, I'd say. In fact, there is still a great deal of stigma among the medical establishment about using drugs like MDMA, even in research. But there has continued to be a trickle of research over the last years. And in fact, there's even been a study, a very tiny study underway at McLean Hospital in Belmont, looking at ecstasy use in terminal stage cancer patients. And there was a very splashy finding that came out last year in which a South Carolina psychiatrist reported that in people with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, he got some very dramatic improvement when he used ecstasy.
Do we know the science behind why that might be the case? I mean, in Mara's case, it had a profound effect on relieving pain.
What they do know is that ecstasy or MDMA affects dopamine. It affects serotonin, which are the feel-good neurotransmitters. It also affects oxytocin. They don't necessarily know exactly what the impact on pain relief is, but certainly they have some inclinations as to why it would help with existential pain. So the extent to which her pain was exacerbated by concern and worry and fear for her parents and her friends, it had probably multiple effects on her.
And, Carrie, there are no legal alternatives that have a similar effect then on the neurotransmitters, those particular neurotransmitters in the brain?
Well, I think probably Mara was on all of the conventional drugs,
yes,
which mainly, I think, act on the opiate systems,
yes,
of the brain.
Marilyn, Mara didn't jump from trying conventional treatments to ecstasy. She had tried medical marijuana as well?
When she was in California, someone gave her some, and it had no real effect on her.
It had no effect.
Later
on, she found that once she started in this path of psychedelics, then marijuana sometimes added to the effect of the psychedelic and enhanced it and made it better.
And Meghna, one of my favorite moments in the book was that Marilyn actually had to inhale or at least get the marijuana going herself. She would breathe the smoke into her own mouth and then breathe it into Mara's, right? Which I thought was also an ultimate,
yeah,
mothering moment. And it would make Marilyn all groggy and out,
yeah,
of it. She didn't like it.
I didn't want to be groggy when I was caring for her. But Mara's, the lining of her respiratory tract was just too delicate. She couldn't take it in unless the smoke was cooled. So I would breathe it, and then I'd breathe it into her, and she has a wonderful sense of humor. She called me Mom Bong. Not a title I really relished, but she made me laugh through some of the most horrific times.
Well, the reason why I ask about the marijuana is because, Carrie, as you wrote today on Common Health, that medical marijuana is now legal in some 16 states.
Indeed.
So are we sort of at the very, very beginnings of maybe a small shift in the perception of these drugs as alternative forms of treatment?
Right. Well, that's just what I was wondering about. I was thinking about how there's been such a tremendous shift in the attitudes toward medical marijuana. And I can remember a decade or so ago, it was considered very avant-garde. And there were all these great stories floating around about people who would bake magic brownies for their relatives who were otherwise straight as an arrow, and they would do it out of love to help them through their cancer-related nausea or glaucoma or other terminal illnesses. And now it feels like it has become a very accepted fact of life that medical marijuana is okay, at least in 16 progressive states. And so what I wondered is whether that change in social attitudes might also affect the attitudes towards drugs like ecstasy.
But we should say that in those states where medical marijuana is legal, you have to get it through a doctor's prescription. And so therefore, there is at least some medical oversight of the process of patients who are taking it. And I raise that because I imagine, Marilyn and Carrie, there's a lot of people out there who are listening to this right now who are saying, while this story is incredible, we also have to remember that what you did currently is still illegal. And
yes,
there was no doctor who was overseeing the process, and there could have potentially been some, you know, dangerous or terrible side effects.
This is why I was very careful about having a therapist who knew something, who had contact with emergency room doctors, who looked at all the drugs she was on to see if there would be any interferences or complications. We had the advantage that someone in a medical environment would have had.
And I think the other point is that Mara was days from death,
yes,
right? And so, you know, the reason that drugs like ecstasy are illegal is because they can be addictive or they can be bad for your brain. And for a patient like Mara, those are really not concerns, I think.
Yes. When you've seen your own child suffer day after day after day, the risk that she might end her life a day sooner to have a day without pain just is a moot point.
So, Carrie, where does that leave us now in terms of the science and the medicine behind looking at ecstasy as potential forms of treatment for end-of-life care?
Well, I believe that the research is continuing, and in
yes,
fact, I think part of Marilyn's purpose in publicizing her story is to garner support for the research. And I have to say that personally, I've complained to Marilyn, actually, that I think she's kind of raised the bar for those of us who love someone who's dying. I mean, I had never heard of this as even a possibility. I certainly had thought if someone I love is dying, I would get them marijuana, whether it was legal or not. But now this raises an additional possibility that I think we might want to think about.
Carrie, you said that when you read Marilyn's book, Honor Thy Daughter, that it made you cry. And listening to you, Marilyn, I can completely understand why. But I also want to know, in those last days of Mara's life, when she was pain-free, as a mother, looking at your daughter, what were you feeling and thinking at that moment?
Isn't it incredible that my daughter can have these moments of loving life again when you would think that it was all over? She could come back. She could be herself. She could joke. 2 days before she was dying, she couldn't move her limbs, but her dad and I could move her limbs to music, her last dance. It was ebullient. It was amazing. And it gave me something to reflect on when she died. If you don't find a seed of gratitude amidst the tragedy, you have nothing to build on. So even though it was a small part in time of this horrible odyssey, those sparkling moments are what kept me going.
Well, Marilyn Howell, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health Blog, thank you so much for bringing Marilyn's story to our attention.
Well, thank you, Marilyn, for writing a book that really affected me. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can read Carrie Goldberg's review of Marilyn Howell's book, Honor Thy Daughter, at commonhealth.wbur.org. And there's an excerpt of the book on our website, radioboston.org. While there, drop us a line about what you think of the whole idea of using psychedelic drugs to ease end-of-life pain. And you can also post a comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/radioboston.
Tomorrow on Radio Boston, the debate over secure communities, a federal plan to check the immigration status of everyone who gets fingerprinted by local police.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.